Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show here on 102.7 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, November the 19th, 2010. I am your co-host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by my co-host, Carissa Thorpe, and our guest technician, Maniac Dan, who is running the controls. Thank you, Dan. Our other co-host, Joanna, is away today. On today's program, our first interview is with Michelle Allie Grubb, one of the founders of Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary in Colorado. On previous shows in the past month, we've been talking about the Go Vegan Now ads that have been making their presence, their very dominant presence, on the Vancouver public transit buses all over town. There are large ads on the sides of the various buses, plus 50 more on the insides of the buses for the passengers to see, and they depict bold messages such as milk comes from a grieving mother with a blatant image of a mother cow's face, and then they tell the viewer to go vegan now. We've seen nothing like it before in Vancouver, so I thought it would be really interesting to find out more about this campaign, which is probably the first of its nature in Canada. Later on the show, we'll be speaking to Kate Fowler, all the way from the United Kingdom, for our feature interview. Kate is the head of campaigns for the very progressive and established animal rights group in the UK called Animal Aid. Animal Aid did a series of undercover investigations inside slaughterhouses earlier this year, and the results of the video footage that they captured have prompted them to put a call out to make it mandatory for all slaughterhouses in the UK to install closed-circuit television, that CCTV, inside the slaughterhouses, and to allow third-party entities access to them to be able to monitor the happenings inside the slaughterhouses. That is to say, the atrocious breaches of the slaughter regulations that are found to be regularly happening inside the facilities. When I first read about this campaign last month, I was very intrigued because this is like Paul McCartney's quote coming true, and that's when he says that if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be vegetarian. And of course, the UK and Europe are far more progressive in their animal welfare standards than we are here in North America. So I just wonder if this could really happen in the UK, which it seems to me like it could. And if it does, it will be really interesting to see what kind of a precedent this will set for similar systems to start running in North American slaughterhouses. And before I pass the mic on to you, Carissa, I know you have a subscription to Veg News Magazine, as do I, and yeah. I received the latest and much-anticipated issue, it was last week, I think, which announced the annual Veg News Awards that they hold every year. Did you happen to read that part of the magazine yet?
I just picked it up last night. I don't actually have a subscription, but I was reading through it. I was saving it for tonight to read.
Saving it for a rainy day, which probably will be today. Well, anyways, I was very delighted and somewhat surprised to read that our city, Vancouver, won the title of Favorite International City. Isn't that fantastic?
Really?
Yeah.
Cool.
And I guess especially so since we get to live here. You don't exactly live in Vancouver, but I do at least, and you come here a lot, I think.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to make a quick mention of that for our listeners, that Vancouver is officially the favorite international city of the thousands and thousands of Veg News magazine readers who filled out the survey. Now, I wonder if this has anything to do with the Olympics being here this year and Vancouver getting that much more media attention, or maybe it's just our food. What do you think?
I don't know. Maybe people came here for the Olympics, and maybe we made them want to go veg. Who knows?
We'll never know, which there was an explanation with that. Really interesting survey.
Yeah.
So I know that you went to the mall this week, Carissa, and you'd like to tell us about what you saw there.
Yeah, I stopped at Park Royal Mall this week, and I found a couple of items that I was looking to purchase, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. And the reason for that was because I was seriously taken aback by their in-mall advertising. All along the top floor of the mall is a banner on the wall advertising what you can find on the second floor, including puppies, pillow tops, and plungers, hamsters, handbags, and haircuts, and ring binders, reptiles, and refrigerators is how they've sort of said, hey, there's animals on the second floor, because there's a pet habitat located on the second floor.
Nice use of alliteration, but
yeah.
I don't know about the reptiles and puppies.
Yeah, I felt really taken aback by the fact that they're comparing puppies to the purchase of a plunger. I mean, a puppy is a much more serious purchase than thinking about buying a plunger for your bathroom. You know, you need to put a lot more thought into it.
And it seems like they specifically were targeting the pet store,
yes,
because they used it in all of the little alliteration.
Yeah, there were four or five of them.
Wow.
I took some pictures of three of them. And so the pet habitat on the second floor, I went up there to look at it, and they had two sets of kittens in the window. And one of the sets looked too young even by regular pet store standards.
What's the pet store standard?
I think it's 6 weeks. Like, they were so tiny. I guess it's good for sales, but they looked way too young to be away from their mother.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't actually take the time to ask because it was just sort of upsetting to me to see them there, because I've been so excited about Richmond banning the sale of puppies. And
it was probably a shock to you to say, like, oh my goodness, this is in West Vancouver, right? And what's the deal? They're banning them in Richmond, and here in West Vancouver,
it's okay. Yeah. And at the city council meeting in Richmond that I was fortunate enough to attend, Pet Habitat kept coming up as one of the most notorious for mistreating their animals, as well as not giving refunds, not asking, like, not properly educating people on the purchase that they're making, the responsibility that comes with pets. Like, there were a lot of people that were talking about that at that meeting. So it was sort of upsetting to see that the mall is so, like...
Yeah, it's interesting how people can be progressive in one city or one country. And we'll actually be talking more about that later. And then, you know, across town, it's the same old.
Yeah.
Right? So that's really sad. And perhaps, I guess you said you couldn't be brought to buy anything from there. So
yeah, from the mall.
You effectively boycotted the mall.
Yeah.
And that's in promotion for holiday gift giving and that.
Yeah.
So yes, definitely something to think about.
Yeah. I think I'm going to send them an email probably later tonight just to let them know that I'm not interested in purchasing anything from the mall based on, I think they're being irresponsible by just encouraging people to thoughtlessly buy an animal
along with a plunger.
Yeah.
And if you get a response, let us know next week
or
whenever you get a response. Yeah, thanks for that, Carissa. Really interesting. And we have a PRA here from Dan.
Take 27.
All Co-op Radio members are invited to Co-op Radio's annual general meeting.
It's Co-op Radio's annual general meeting. All Co-op Radio members are invited Sunday, November 21st to the Aboriginal Friendship Center at 1607 East Hastings, a commercial drive. Registration's at 1 p.m. and we'd like to start the meeting by 1:30 sharp, so please arrive between 1 and 1:30. Join us to find out what's been happening at your Co-op Radio, meet the programmers, and elect incoming members to the board. A draft of the AGM report will be available at the station by November 7th. To receive an electronic copy, contact programs@cooperadio.org. Please submit potential resolutions by November 14th to board-liaison@cooperadio.org.
Okay, take 28.
All right, this week in the events, Carmivore, the vegan store, is moving to their new location at 610 Columbia Street in New Westminster to bigger, more accessible digs. In preparation for the move, they are having a sale. Everything in the store is 20% off from now until November 28th, which is their last day at the current location at 468 East Columbia Street in Sapperton. The sale is valid both in-store and online, and the coupon code to use for online orders is NOV20OFF, so that's NOV20OFF. Find Carmivore on the World Wide Web at www.carmivore.ca or on Facebook. Lolita, Slave to Entertainment and Earthlings double screening on November 20th at the Central Branch of the Vancouver Public Library in the Alma Van Dusen Room on the lower level. When Liberation BC last screened Earthlings in January, there were 150 people in attendance, with about half the viewership being meat eaters. The impact of that screening included a high school teacher who went vegan and began to talk to his students about animal rights, a quiet longtime vegetarian who became an outspoken vegan, and a meat eater who decided to gradually reduce his meat consumption and learn about vegetarian cooking. Doors for the double feature open at 12:30 p.m., and the documentary Lolita, Slave to Entertainment, about the life of 37-year-old performing killer whale Lolita, will shed light on the multi-billion dollar aquarium industry at 1 p.m., followed by the unsurpassed animal exploitation documentary Earthlings, which is narrated by Joaquin Phoenix at 2:15 p.m. Bring a friend, a family member, or a complete stranger and fill those seats and open hearts and minds.
Yeah, I would say if you're going to this, definitely try to bring someone.
Yeah.
Because you don't want it to be with a room full of people who know all this stuff.
Yeah.
The point of watching Earthlings is definitely to show it to someone who hasn't seen
it before. In my experience watching Earthlings, you might want someone's hand to hold.
So that's
it's a bit
even more of a good reason to take someone with you.
Yeah, spread the word around your community by printing a poster off the Liberation BC website or Facebook page. Stop UBC Animal Research is having a meeting this Saturday, November 20th from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Spec Building on the corner of Maple and 6, which is two blocks west of Burrard Street in Kitsilano. The room is being rented for the meeting, so any donation you can make to help cover the cost is greatly appreciated. Campaign updates, new findings about UBC's experiments on animals, and a brainstorm session of future actions to take to alert the public to UBC's animal experiments are all on the agenda. Feel free to bring a vegan dish or drink to share, along with your own cup and dinnerware to keep the meeting green. Liberation BC's Animal Advocacy Advocacy Camp preliminary planning meeting is happening this Wednesday, November 24th. This is your chance to get in on the ground floor and have your say as to what is covered in Liberation BC's upcoming second annual Animal Advocacy Training Camp, tentatively set to take place in early 2011. Animal Advocacy Camp is an attendee-led, open dialogue event focusing on the local animal rights movement in Vancouver. You can find more information about last year's event, including participant testimonials, posted on Liberation BC's blog, either on Facebook or on their website, liberationbc.org. The meeting takes place at the Mount Pleasant Community Center, which is located on the corner of Kingsway and Main at First Street, and runs from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. Again, that's this coming Wednesday, November 24th.
I'm hoping to attend that meeting myself, and we spoke about the animal advocacy camp that happened earlier this year in January. Were you there, Carissa?
No, I wasn't.
Yeah. It was a really good turnout. You know, we had about 90 people there, and
there
were all facets, like all over, to have to do with animal protection and just any animal welfare groups and that. People from all over the city that attended, and it was just really a wonderful day, and I think everyone just left there so energized and just full of positivity. And you know, there have been offshoot events coming from that, so it's a really worthwhile thing.
I was reading some of the testimonials as well, and somebody said that they had actually come up from Portland to sort of steal our ideas and take them back down there. So that's cool.
That's great. Yeah. That's great to know.
And finally, Liberation BC is also hosting a contest. Submit your best, be they funny, clever, thought-provoking, or all of the above, button designs to raise awareness about the suffering of turkeys or dairy cows for your chance to win a Bamboo Liberation BC t-shirt, as well as a one-year Liberation BC membership, which is a combined value of $40, along with the chance to have your message reach the public at every event Liberation BC attends, where they will sell your creation. Two winners will be chosen, one for the turkeys and one for the dairy cows. The deadline to enter is December 15th, so get your submissions in today via the Liberation BC Facebook page, where there is a link and more information awaiting you.
Thanks so much for that, Carissa. We have on the show today, with us today, Michelle Ellie Grubb of Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary in Colorado. Peaceful Prairie is a nonprofit organization that provides safe, loving, and permanent homes for rescued farm animals, as well as promotes vegan living as the most effective way to reduce the suffering and exploitation of animals. And in doing so, Peaceful Prairie has made a leap out to here in Vancouver, Canada recently, as they are responsible for the Go Vegan Now bus ads that have been seen popping up on transit, public transit buses around the city for over a month now, and are continuing on until December. Michelle is here to speak with us today about this campaign and some of the other work that Peaceful Prairie is engaged in. Hello, Michelle, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi, Pat. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to speak with you. Now, can you start by telling us a bit about Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary? When did you start the sanctuary and why?
Well, my husband and I had been vegan for years, and then in 1997, we bought a rural property in Colorado. Up until that point, we'd been doing cat rescue, feral cat rescue, and some wildlife rescue and rehabilitation, but then some friends of ours were moving from Maryland to Colorado, and they had rescued farmed animals and needed a place for them to stay temporarily while they were getting their place fixed up in Colorado. So we took in their rescued farmed animals, and it became pretty quickly apparent to us that we should be focusing all of our resources on farmed animal rescue and advocacy through vegan advocacy as well. because, you know, just comparatively speaking, very few resources are dedicated to farmed animals when their plight is just so huge compared to some other issues. So that's how we started Peaceful Prairie.
That's definitely true about the farmed animal situation. How many animals do you have at your sanctuary, and what kinds of farm animals do you have?
Well, the number varies. It's usually around 200.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yeah, it is. But you know, yesterday, one of our dear old goats died.
Oh,
and his name was Tolstoy. He was almost 18 years old. But he would have been brutally slaughtered at a much younger age had he not been rescued. So there's one less today, but that also means that someone new will be coming into our lives in no time, I'm sure. And the sanctuary consists of chickens and ducks and geese and turkeys, peafowl, goats, sheep, llamas, cows, steers, farmed pigs, potbelly pigs.
So you have the whole gamut,
getting
really.
Anybody,
that's,
yeah.
Wow.
It's an eclectic group.
Typically, what kinds of situations are you rescuing them from? Are you going to slaughterhouses? Are you finding them at auctions or on the sides of the road? How are you getting these animals?
Well, I'd say the vast majority of the residents here have been rescued from dairy and egg operations, whether they're these small backyard operations or the larger conventional so-called factory farmed and everything in between. We do investigations of the free-range and cage-free, especially because that is such a popular thing, and most people are under the impression, the false impression, that that is something that's humane and better for the animals, and we are knowing firsthand that that's not the case. So those hens are considered spent when they're not even 2 years old, and they are mass murdered. So as they're switching out flocks and bringing in a whole new set of victims, we're often able to rescue some from those situations. We get calls galore from people setting up their own backyard operations and then discovering that they've got roosters. And of course, roosters don't lay eggs, only hens do. So roosters are either mass murdered at the hatcheries, or the ones that make it through are killed on farms. And then even when people set up these small backyard operations, they either don't want them or can't have them legally. So roosters are just being disposed of, killed, abandoned left and right. So all of that happens. And of course, in the dairy operations, the babies are just a byproduct. And with goats, they tend to have twins. So a lactating goat will have, you know, maybe four babies in a year, and they're constantly being killed and taken to auction and abandoned and all of these other things. So unfortunately, the opportunities for rescue are far greater than even our abilities to rescue most of them. But some lucky individuals make it to the sanctuary, and for each one of them, they're representing the billions more that don't.
And they do sound very lucky. So I know that you've run newspaper ad campaigns in the past in the United States, but this is the first time you've done an ad campaign in Canada. Can you tell us how you got involved and organized to run these ads in Vancouver? And please tell us exactly about the ads themselves. What words and images are exactly depicted on these ads?
Well, there are a couple activists there in Vancouver who have recently started their organization called One Voice, and they contacted us. They were familiar especially with the Milk Comes from a Grieving Mother. We've got that in a bumper sticker. We've also used it in other ad campaigns, and they found that one especially compelling because it has the close-up picture of this mother cow who just has this very bereft look on her face. And just like if you look at another human being, even if you don't speak their language, if they are in distress and are desperate for help and want are suffering, you can look right into that face, and it just speaks volumes. So the same is true of this poor mother cow. And so then the tagline reads, "Milk comes from a grieving mother," because most people don't even realize that she has to be a mother in order for her to be lactating. And then we've got the Go Vegan Now website at the bottom for them to go and learn more. So yeah, so these activists were familiar with that campaign. They knew that we'd run it in other places. They wanted to see it on the Vancouver buses, and we were thrilled to help make that happen.
That's just wonderful, and they are getting seen here around town. I think you have 10 of the large ones on the outside of the buses and 50 on the insides of the buses. Is that correct?
That's right. And the other ad is a close-up of a hen's face, and she's looking right at you as you're reading it, and the line says, to you it's only a taste, to her it's life itself. Go vegan now. So, like the milk comes from a grieving mother, it speaks from their perspective. That's all they want. They are sentient beings like any of us. They don't want to be exploited, especially for something that is just a fleeting pleasure for a human and is literally their life and their baby's lives.
I'm curious to know, did you receive any hesitancy to run these ads from the ad company that works for TransLink? Because I know that they were not willing to run similar animal welfare ads that the Vancouver Humane Society wanted to display in the SkyTrain several years ago. So it's kind of surprising to me that these ads were allowed. Were they hesitant at all in running these advertisements with these provocative images and words?
Well, I really wasn't involved much in the negotiations for them. The activists in Vancouver were dealing with the ad representatives there, and they got it done. There, as far as I know, there wasn't hesitancy, so we were really happy to make it work. And I would just want to clarify real quickly: these I would not consider animal welfare ads. The distinction being that animal welfare does condone animal use just as long as it's done in certain methods. These are animal rights ads, so the Go Vegan message is to that it's not humane to use animals under any circumstances for human use, and that, you know, we just want to, the public to understand that if they do have empathy for these animals, that going vegan is what they can do.
Yeah, and that's my next question. Why the abolitionist approach in your messages? It's, you know, these messages and images are probably the first time that many people are just even thinking about this kind of stuff. Do you think it's too much of a leap to show the grieving mothers and then say, go vegan now? Do you think the general public is ready for this?
I think they have to be told that. I think anything else would be a waste of our resources and a disservice to the animals. I mean, that is something. I wish I had known those truths, first off. I mean, the information is power, and that information about what happens to animals, as long as there is inherent cruelty, and no matter what the method of production is. And so it's our job as advocates to speak for the animals, let the general public know that they're contributing to it or not. Now, at what rate they go vegan, if they go vegan, that's up to them, but we would not be telling them the truth, and we would not be advocating for the animals if we were telling them anything else. So the Go Vegan Now message is just, it's just like, don't beat your child. there's not an option.
Exactly.
To do that.
Yes, your child less. It's just don't beat your child at all.
Exactly. Right. And like any other advocacy for any other oppressed group or victim, an advocate really needs to be advocating for that victim. And yeah, I absolutely think just like the public can understand it's not okay to, even though some people still beat their children, they understand when they're told that it's not okay why they're being told that.
So why place these ads on buses? Like, that's like really mainstream. And I know you've had other ads in major newspapers in the States. Is this a form of outreach that you feel is reaching a segment of society that wouldn't otherwise be reached by your organization or even maybe other similar organizations for that matter?
Well, it's one of our many tools in our toolboxes, and so when we can get something big like that up in, whether it's a newspaper or a billboard or on buses, just numbers-wise, we're going to reach more people. And also, you're kind of reaching them in their comfort zone, especially when they're commuting. We do tabling, and so do the activists with One Voice, and actually you can contact them. We've got their contact information on our website.
I have contacted them. I met them.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
great.
And that's how I got in contact with you, actually.
Yeah, well, they've been doing tabling up there, too. So, you know, all of us have lots of different ways that we can be advocating for the animals. So it's really when we can get these big ads up in big public places, obviously you're going to reach many more people with the message or have the potential to reach many more people with that message. And then there's follow-up through one-on-one, internet, all these other things too.
Yeah, and as for follow-up, I'm just curious about what the feedback has been like since these bus ads have been launched. I know you're directing people to go to your website. So, for example, have you been tracking the web analytics to see how many hits you've been getting from Vancouver?
We started just paying more attention, and yeah, it was pretty immediate on the 4th, which I think was October 4th, was the first day that they ran. Suddenly there was a big surge in web hits from the Vancouver area, and most were coming from searches. Yeah, and when they come from searches, that tells us that it's, you know, not somebody just getting a link and passing a link on. It's someone who went in. So that's what our website is getting. Then we have email requests for more information. But also, I'm sure what's happening, too, is when people just, they might just have the word vegan in their head, and maybe that's what they remembered. And so they'll go home and they'll type in the word vegan, and who knows where they'll land. Fortunately, with the Internet, there's just information galore. So, yeah, it's just getting the word vegan as part of their vocabulary, demystifying it, and giving that basic ethical information just from the get-go. How they pursue that information, I mean, there are just myriad ways for them to do so, but we have definitely seen an increase in web traffic and much more people joining our email list and requesting more info and all of that.
That's definitely good to hear. It's really encouraging for other groups, say, in Vancouver, just to know that this kind of advertising really does work. So quickly, before we end this talk, you have some other wonderful campaigns that I've seen in your website, and one that I specifically would like to briefly mention, which I absolutely love, is your email signature billboards campaign. It's absolutely one of the easiest forms of vegan outreach that an individual and even the most modest individual can carry out in their daily lives. Can you quickly tell us about the email signature billboards?
Well, Joanna Lucas is the creative genius behind all of those email signatures. She's also designed The Milk Comes from a Grieving Mother and The Life Itself, and she's written much more in-depth portraits of the sanctuary residents on our blog. So she has made so many things available to people online, whether it's the email signatures, and as you've seen, there's something for everybody on those email signatures.
Yeah.
You can rotate them. We also have a lot of downloadable literature. People can order the literature. We've got videos and the blog and all of that other things, all of those other things. And as you said, there is something for everybody, but that's just it. Everybody should be doing something because the animals need every one of us.
Yeah, and
I just
want to mention that there's a link to your email signatures page on our website, animalvoices.org. It's also at your website, peacefulprairie.org, because I just love them. It's something that it's so easy to do. There's beautiful pictures, beautiful messages. As you said, something for everyone. I think you have almost 60 of them on there, which is like just
wonderful.
It was
hard to choose.
Yeah, I know. I chose two, actually. One for my replies and one for my new emails, which you can set on Outlook. So
That's a good idea.
Yeah, it's just great. So what can people do to support the wonderful work that you are doing at Peaceful Prairie?
Well, they can, of course, donate, because I want to tell you, everybody here at Peaceful Prairie donates their time and their skills and everything. We are an all-volunteer organization, and I can guarantee you will get your bang for your buck if you donate to Peaceful Prairie, because we put every penny that we've got into the individual animal care, into these varied and compelling ad campaigns and advocacy campaigns, and we're always coming up with new outreach materials. And we will put every cent of it, and then some, all of ours, our time, our money, our energy, our emotional, physical, you name it, we're putting all of this into this every single day. So anything that can be added to that will grow exponentially for the animals, I guarantee you.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today, Michelle, to tell us about Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary and some of the good work you are doing there and also here in Vancouver. For more information on Peaceful Prairie Sanctuary, please visit peacefulprairie.org. Thanks again, Michelle.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Just a reminder that you are listening to the Animal Voices radio show on 102.7 Co-op Radio in Vancouver, BC, Canada. In the news today, ecorazzie.com has reported this week that in the premiere episode of Sarah Palin's new reality television show entitled Sarah Palin's Alaska, which airs on both TLC...
It started already, hasn't it?
It has.
Oh,
I guess it was already on the Discovery Channel, and now it's just premiered on TLC. So now we can watch it. Yay! That happened on Sunday. Has raised concern from a local conservationist in Alaska. The incident in question was a family fishing trip which saw Palin and company fishing right next to a family of protected brown bears, which violates the state's wildlife guidelines, which require that boat passengers be at least 30 feet from the protected animals when fishing. Alaska Wildlife Alliance Director John Toppenberg said of the incident that it's clear from the video that she violated the guidelines. At one point in the footage, Palin can be heard to say, "Let's get the fish before the bear gets the fish." And one of her children starts to make roaring noises.
Sounds like something she'd say.
Yeah, they were pretty much close enough. I watched the video and they were just enough that the bear could have touched them.
I can just imagine, "Let's get the fish before the bear gets the fish."
Yeah.
You know?
Perhaps not surprisingly, the former vice presidential candidate is not under fire from an animal protection group for the first time, as the Defenders of Wildlife Action Fund has circulated a petition now boasting over 534,000 signatures in askance of Discovery to pull the show from their roster, though the likelihood of them doing so is very low since the premiere garnered the channel its biggest launch viewership with 5 million turning in. The Humane Society of the United States, in partnership with the Art Institutes, hosted their annual Cool vs. Cruel award ceremony earlier this month as a means to draw attention to the fur industry and to showcase alternatives to fur in fashion. The challenge is put to Art Institute students from across both America and Canada to creatively reinterpret and replace pieces from designers who have used fur in their garments. Mm-hmm. This year, students had the inhumane works of Zac Posen, Giorgio Armani, Burberry, Prorsum, and Thakoon to choose from. This year's winner was Valeria Krasavina of Miami International University of Art Design. The honor includes an all-expenses-paid week-long internship with an unnamed, celebrated fur-free designer. CEO and President of the Humane Society of the United States, Wayne Pacell, said of the event, "Cool versus Cruel is all about our determination and relentless focus to put an end to the fur industry. The beauty with this event is that we're bringing new people in and trying to create a groundswell within the fashion industry to eliminate fur." And in other fashion-related news, celebrated vegan designer Stella McCartney has been named the creative director by Adidas for Team Great Britain's Olympic and Paralympic performance wear for the 2010 mm-hmm. Olympics, set to take place in London. McCartney will also design the village wear, as well as the retail garments available for purchase by the general public. While the designs for the opening ceremony will be taken care of by another designer, this is a wonderful cruelty-free step in the right direction. Stella is also currently working with UK Ministry of Defence officials to design a faux fur alternative to the bearskin caps currently worn by the Queen's Guards.
Yeah, I read about that. That would be just a wonderful step in the right direction.
Yeah, I have some Olympic envy, I have to say.
I know, a lot better than our seal skin patch that our athletes had to wear. Did they end up having
to wear that or not?
I don't know that. I don't remember.
I know that they there were a couple of, you know, species that were on the endangered list that we were all right with demolishing to expand the highway and all sorts of things like that. So,
yeah. Is that all for our news?
Yep.
Okay, we've got a few seconds. I just wanted to quickly mention what I read online this morning. Jessica Simpson has gone vegan. Did you know that?
What?
Okay, well, that aside, that's not even the main news. I don't know how long that's going to last.
Chicken of the sea girl?
She has, she has a boyfriend from the NFL, I think. Another mm-hmm. football player. Apparently, he's going to start a chain of vegan fast food restaurants.
Wow.
Yay. And the first one's going to be in LA. I can't wait. So, with that said,
road trip.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go there. There was this wonderful fast food place there called Good Karma that I used mm-hmm. to love, and they shut down a few years ago. I've been like longing for that place ever since. So, maybe this one will replace it.
Maybe.
So, you are listening to the Animal Voices show on 102.7 FM CFRO in Vancouver, Canada. For our feature interview today, we have Kate Fowler on the show, who is the head of campaigns of the UK organization Animal Aid. Animal Aid is the UK's largest animal rights group and one of the longest established in the world, having been founded in 1977. Animal Aid campaigns peacefully against all forms of animal abuse and promotes a cruelty-free lifestyle. It investigates and exposes animal cruelty, and its undercover investigations and other evidence are often used by the media, bringing these issues to public attention. One of these issues that has recently been brought to light is Animal Aid's campaign, in which they are calling for closed-circuit television to be installed in all UK slaughterhouses and for the footage to be made available to independent parties outside of the slaughterhouse. Kate is here today to talk to us about this campaign. Hello, Kate, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hi there. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much for talking to us all the way from the United Kingdom. To start, can you please tell us about the undercover investigations that Animal Aid conducted earlier this year, which instigated the campaign calling for the CCTV? I know you had hidden cameras installed inside several randomly chosen mainstream slaughterhouses in the UK. How many slaughterhouses were filmed, and in general, what were the findings in the video footage taken?
Okay, well, we started almost 2 years ago now. We began filming in January 2009. We weren't really sure how many slaughterhouses would leave their doors open, so we just aimed to get footage from one. And it sort of escalated, and so now we have filmed in 8 slaughterhouses, all covert and all fly-on-the-wall cameras. And we found evidence of breaches of the welfare laws in 7 of those and cruelty in 7 of those as well. We've seen shocking cruelty and indifference and even sadistic, out-and-out sadistic violence, really horrific stuff.
So just to establish what is standard practice in the UK, how are animals supposed to be slaughtered in the slaughterhouse system there? What are the proper processes involved that the workers are supposed to go through to kill an animal?
Okay, well, if we're talking about cows, they are supposed to be stunned first with a captive bolt, and then they will have their throats cut to be bled to death. For sheep and for pigs and for some calves and goats, they'll be stunned electrically, so using electrified tongs that are supposed to span their brains and send a current through. There is a derogation for religious slaughter in the UK, so some halal meat and all Jewish meat, kosher meat, comes from animals that have not been stunned at all.
And now, specifically, what were some of your findings in your undercover video investigation? Can you go into some details for us of what actions were captured on video?
Yes, certainly. We routinely saw animals being kicked in the face, slapped, stamped on, picked up by feces and ears, forcibly thrown across or into the stunning pens. We routinely saw animals screaming, struggling to escape, animals going to the knife without being fully stunned. Animals stunned and then allowed to regain consciousness again. The electric tongs used maliciously on the snouts, ears, tails, bodies, mouths of pigs. And of course, that just results in a huge, painful electric shock for them. We saw pigs being jabbed in the face with electric tongs, ewes being stunned while their lambs were suckling them. A sheep too sick to stand, brought to slaughter in a wheelbarrow. We still don't know if that sheep might already have died before she got to that point. Pigs falling from shackles into blood pits and being dragged out again. Animals being decapitated before they were said to be properly dead. Long periods of time elapsing between electrical stunning and the throat cutting. And as you might know, electrical stunning is reversible. If you don't cut their throats quickly, they do come round again. And so it was a real catalogue of disasters we filmed.
Yeah, it seems like there's just one thing after another after another. And I read the report that you published, and it's really disgusting. And out of this video footage captured, what infractions of the actual slaughter regulations were the workers repeatedly seen committing? Stunning, for example, I know there were a lot of problems there.
That's right, yes. There were so many problems with stunning. In fact, most of the problems did relate to stunning. There were certain slaughterhouses who used the electric tongs as a weapon to floor the animals. So they would give them a brief electric shock just to take them to the ground. Then they would stun them, and then they would shackle them. And sometimes they would stun them again. And, of course, they're just supposed to stun them once and properly. We'd see animals stunned for too short a time. So it's hard to know exactly how long they should be stunned for. It does depend on amperage and voltage and duration, all that kind of thing. But really, it should be 3 to 4 seconds is an estimate. And we were seeing pigs and sheep stunned for a quarter of a second, clearly not unconscious. Animals routinely stunned in the wrong place. The electric tongs must span their brains to get the current to pass through it. If you stun a pig on her ear, that's just not going to do the job. And we saw a lot of that. It's illegal out and out to kick any animal in a slaughterhouse, and pigs were always kicked in the face. It's illegal to throw sheep and drag sheep, and that happened quite a lot. And it's certainly illegal to decapitate animals when they're not dead yet, and we saw that in 2 places.
Who is responsible for the way these animals are being treated when they're killed in these ways? I know it's easy to point fingers at the workers, but who is above them and must be scrutinized?
Well, obviously, there is the worker who is responsible, but in law, ultimate responsibility lies with his boss, the slaughterhouse owner or operator. But government vets are in all slaughterhouses in order to try and regulate and make sure laws are adhered to. They don't seem to be doing their job very well at all. So industry blames them and says, well, you were there, why didn't you tell us things were going wrong? And the vets say, that's not our job, you're the one who's ultimately responsible. But at the end of the line, always, the consumer is responsible. If somebody eats meat, then they are paying for this kind of treatment of animals.
Yeah, and I want to point out that that's really the bottom line is what it comes to. There's no demand for these products, for these animals to be killed and murdered, then it wouldn't happen. Now, I know that both Animal Aid and the Farm Animal Welfare Council in Britain believe that there is much wrong with the slaughterhouse worker training system. Can you talk to us about this and explain why?
Yes, there is a lot wrong with the system. In the UK, pretty much anybody can be a slaughterman. All you need is a few pounds and to want to do it. You get trained on the job and you're never properly examined. You're assessed, but you're assessed by a vet, and that may well be the same vet who works in that slaughterhouse the whole time. So it's not really in his or her best interest to start failing people and saying no, because they have to then work with the management. If they make a wrong decision, the management can complain about that vet and the vet will be moved on. So vets tend to keep a low profile. Slaughtermen are never retrained. You train once, you pay your few pounds and you're in. And 50 years can pass and nobody will ever retrain you. That seems to me a fairly simple thing that can be rectified. Retraining and proper independent assessment is essential. And there's something else that actually we're pushing for the government to look at, and that is that in the UK it's written into the law that anybody working in a slaughterhouse must be a, quote, fit and proper person. Mm-hmm. But no one seems to know what that is, and no one seems to know how to test for that. Now, we know that there are murderers and rapists working in British slaughterhouses,
yeah.
And our feeling is that if they can't be trusted to behave respectfully and decently to human beings, there's virtually no chance they're going to behave with compassion and decency towards animals. So we've asked the government to find out who is working in slaughterhouses, and they don't even ask the question, so they don't know. When you apply for slaughter licence, you will be asked if you've got any animal welfare convictions. If you have and you admit to it, that doesn't disbar you necessarily from getting a slaughter licence. If you have but you lie about it, you'll never get caught out because nobody will check up on you. So there's lots of things that really can be tightened up in that sort of initial training and application process.
So as a result of this investigation, Animal Aid and the British Food Standards Agency is calling for CCTV, that's closed-circuit television, to be mandatory to have in slaughterhouses, among some other things. Can you elaborate on exactly what you are asking for, and who are you asking?
Well, we're asking everybody, because that's the kind of people we are. The government is deeply conservative and is in no mood to do this. It's very much hand-in-glove with the industry. But we have an agency called the Food Standards Agency, and they actually are contracted by the government to monitor slaughterhouses. So it's them that arranges for vets and meat hygiene workers to be in slaughterhouses. And they have been extraordinarily supportive. Unfortunately, neither they nor we nor anybody else can make it compulsory for CCTV to be in slaughterhouses. So we have to do it via a voluntary system. Unfortunately, lots of our laws now come from Europe, and things get written into those laws that we can't, as a country, change even if we wanted to, which is a whole other story, I guess. So we're trying to now pursue supermarkets, who wield an awful lot of power in the UK. Now, we're not saying we want them to buy meat. Of course, we'd much rather all supermarkets were vegetarian and vegan, but we have to live in this real world where 94%, I think it is now, of our residents in the UK do still eat meat, unfortunately.
Wow.
So we're asking supermarkets, we do need you to insist that the slaughterhouses that supply you have got CCTV in place, and that footage must be made available to independent authorities. Now, that would include the Food Standards Agency, and it would include the supermarket. Ideally, it would come to us, Animal Aid, as well, but industry would not tolerate that for a moment. One day, we'd like to have it live streamed so anybody can just have a look at it.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Exactly. Would the public be able to watch this? I think, you know, it seems like you're heading in the right direction, and that would be one of the definite steps down the road. So with these, with these recent investigations this year and last year as well, what have been some of the tangible results that of what has happened to the slaughterhouses after the video was exposed?
Okay, well, 7 of the 8 have been looked at in terms of the fact they've been breaking the law. 6 were taken to, were investigated with a view to prosecution. That was all going swimmingly until we had a change of government, who then dropped all the charges and hasn't given yet a credible reason why. But despite that, a lot of the men filmed, most of the men filmed actually, have been suspended or had their licenses revoked. So that's something. One slaughterhouse was closed down permanently. The person they supplied in Germany saw our footage and said they didn't want to be associated, and they pulled the contract. Another slaughterhouse had its contract with a major British supermarket suspended for several months and suffered as a result of that until it tightened up its work. Our call for CCTV has now been picked up by the Food Standards Agency, other animal protection groups, quite large ones, Soil Association, which is an organic organisation here in the UK, and the Food Standards Agency, and MPs are now coming on board as well. Various universities are using our footage to train vets, which is quite nice. In fact, I'm going to one of those universities next week to sit in and see exactly how they're using it and also contribute, which will be interesting. And we've actually made now the industry sit up and listen. We've shown them up for what they are, and they're happy to take action. So that's really positive. But for me, the best thing is the number of emails and phone calls I get from people saying, I've seen your footage and I'll never eat meat again.
That is amazing. And, you know, just from this one campaign, you've been getting so many results recently. And even just today, there was a story in the UK Independent newspaper saying that there's a grocery store that is now going to make it mandatory to have the CCTV in their slaughterhouses. Is that right?
That's right, yes, it actually just came through today, so you're right on the money.
I can't imagine that happening here in Canada or the States. I just think you're so much more progressive than us. But it's wonderful to hear.
It is wonderful, and at the same time, it's deeply depressing that we're pushing for something that is not even halfway to what we want.
I know.
We have to take
You've got to start somewhere. I think that the curve of progress is going to be very steep after this, and I think that things are going to happen for the animals. It's just about getting the public to become aware of what is happening. So,
that's it.
Yeah, exactly. So, now, I understand that your call for CCTV to be installed in all slaughterhouses has now been endorsed by the chief executive of the Food Standards Agency, which is the industry's regulator. How much power do they have to get something like this instigated as law in the UK?
Well, they can't make it law any more than I can, unfortunately. But they are in a much more powerful position than us. In fact, the chief executive has been in slaughterhouses and slaughtered animals in his youth. He's worked in the milk and meat industry all his life. And for him to support us has actually been a major boost, because he's clearly not one of us. And yet he's gone out on a limb to support us in this. We're uneasy allies. I mean, he is the man responsible for putting vets in slaughterhouses, and clearly they're not doing their jobs very well. So we have an uneasy relationship. But that said, we're very grateful for his support, and I'm sure that we wouldn't have got anywhere as far as we have without him. He knows all the right people to speak to, and he really has gone out on a limb for us. It's beyond his remit, but he's made it his mission, if you like, and we're saying we're very grateful for that.
That is great to hear as well. It's very unusual when you find someone out of the animal rights realm, you know, wanting to support initiatives like this. So I'm curious to know what kind of feedback this campaign has been getting from the British public in general, the consumers.
It's been great, by and large. Just last week, we placed adverts in 6 national newspapers to say the situation to date very briefly, and to ask people to send postcards. We have a postcard campaign to the supermarkets. We really just want to deluge them, and because of that deluge, that's why that first supermarket has actually announced today that they will have CCTV.
Wow.
So we're starting. We just wanted to get one, and then the others will follow suit. It'll become, we hope, normal practice. So that's very exciting.
Public pressure works.
It really does.
Yeah.
It really does. And so, yes, we've spent, well, everybody in the office, there's about 15 of us, and pretty much everybody has had to drop their work to deal with the number of requests we've had for information. So people contact us to say they've seen what we've said, they want to help, what can they do? And alongside the standard things you tell people, you can write letters, you can do this, you can do that. We say, what you don't want to hear it, but what you could do that will do the most good is to stop eating meat. And we send them an introduction to going vegetarian, and we slowly, hopefully, bring them on side as well. So we're reaching a whole load of people we'd never have reached before, and we're sending out thousands and thousands and thousands of packs. So everybody's so busy packing envelopes, you wouldn't believe it.
Great to hear. And it's the kind of work that you want to be overworked in, right? So
absolutely, yes. No complaints from me.
How has the meat industry in the UK been responding to your undercover investigations and to your campaign to have the CCTV in slaughterhouses? On the online meat trades journal, I read that they say that animal welfare standards are taken extremely seriously, and this is why the current proposals to have the CCTV in abattoirs are being seriously considered by the industry as a whole. However, I've also read elsewhere that the industry has not backed the installation of CCTV to monitor animal welfare, as it says that visual checks by the FSA staff should be sufficient. So which one of these claims is actually true?
Neither. They don't want CCTV, they won't speak to us, and they don't want the vets either. They don't want any regulation. In fact, they were moving, before we sort of stomped in, they were moving towards self-regulation, trying to get vets out altogether and saying they should be able to run their own business. So we've rather rained on their parade by showing that they're not capable of running their business legally, even with vets overseeing them. They don't deal with us at all. They go through their trade organisations, and they become the mouthpieces for the slaughterhouses, and they so far have not wanted to meet with us. But there are people who are kind of one step away, the veterinary agencies and the British Veterinary Association and various others, who do meet with us, and they're very suspicious of us to start with. I think they thought we were crazy vegan lunatics, and they weren't that keen on us. But I think, I truly believe that if you work hard and you work ethically, you portray facts truthfully,
right,
and you don't embellish, and you just present what you found. I mean, God knows it's bad enough. You don't have to make it up. I think people do take you seriously if you present something professionally, and they have come round. And now we get all kinds of information from insider sources, from people who really shouldn't be telling us what they're telling us, because they want to see us succeed in this. And we've won an awful lot of friends from unusual places, like we were saying before.
Well, I really feel that your organization is very professional. You've got it together, and it kind of made me laugh when you used the term vegan lunatics, because I didn't know that carried overseas. So Paul McCartney, Paul McCartney has been famously known as saying, if slaughterhouses had glass walls, everyone would be a vegetarian. If this proposal becomes a reality and we see cameras being installed in all the slaughterhouses with that footage made available, this is essentially what will be happening. Do you feel yourself that there is truth to Paul McCartney's prediction?
I do. I think almost all people couldn't look into an animal's eyes and then go out and eat that animal. I think nobody could eat their own dog, and I think it's not that big a leap to get them to see it. They just don't want to see it, and that's the difficult thing. We have all the evidence. We have footage of factory farms, of slaughter, of live export. We have the whole shebang. We just need people to see it, and then we need to be able to explain that giving up meat is actually not really giving up, you're gaining something a whole lot better. And I don't think there's a magic bullet. If there was, I'm sure one of us would have worked it out by now. I think it's just a question of tackling individual people and working on them in any way that will work for them. If they're interested in the environment, then that's the angle you come from. If they're interested in health, then you take that decision with them. But I really think if people had to see slaughter, they would have a hard time eating meat.
Thank you so much, Kate, for coming on the show today to talk to us about this precedent-setting issue. To find out more about this campaign to have CCTV installed in all slaughterhouses in the UK, please visit Animal Aid's website at animalaid.org.uk. You can view extensive video footage there as well as the investigation's findings. And there is also a condensed 4-minute video available there and also on our website, animalvoices.org, that you can take a look at. Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
And on next week's show, we'll have Adrian Nelson of Fur Bearer Defenders in studio with us to tell us about their upcoming holiday campaign that launches next week. The campaign aims to draw holiday shoppers' awareness to the prevalence of cat and dog fur being passed off as faux fur, with the main goals being to ban the sale and import of all cat and dog fur in Canada and to lobby the Canadian government to legislate honest labeling laws for all fur items. If you enjoyed the show today, please take the time to add us on Facebook by searching Animal Voices Vancouver or on Twitter under Animal Voices YVR. We're also on iTunes, so you can download this and past shows there or listen on our Facebook page. And if you would like to support the Animal Voices show financially, you can go to the Co-op Radio website at cooperadio.org and become a member, citing Animal Voices as your favorite show, which will help to keep us on the air. And now we leave you with the song Hot Dog by vegan band Green Beings. See you next week.
See you next week.
My sweetheart brought home some regular pranks. I knew she meant well, so I had to say thanks. But honey pie, frankly, a word to the wise. When it's this shape and color, don't get regular size. That's it now, honey. If word of this got out in the street, the guys would laugh all day long about the length of my meat. Go for the footlongs whenever you can, 'cause regular hot dogs don't make me a man. Hot dog, hot dog, get me the kind that's as big as a log, baby. Hot dog, hot biggity dog, for you are the dog food and I am the dog. So she brought back some franks that were as big as can be. But what's this long scary word that begins with a V? She said, that's vegetarian. I said, what does that mean? She said, it's good for your heart, 'cause it's healthy and lean. I said, come on girl, how am I supposed to make things happen? If I'm eating meatless franks with all this healthy crap in it. You know, sometimes fatter is better than leaner, and my case is